Welcome to episode 467 of That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. My name is Michael Eriksson, and today I interview Coach Russ Cox. Russ is well known among a niche audience of athletes and coaches who are trying to optimize chances for Kona qualification and 73 Worlds qualification. He was first on That Triathlon Show already back in late 2017, and returns today, almost 8 years later, to discuss the newly updated Kona and 73 Worlds qualification systems that were announced by Ironman in early July. So we'll cover exactly how this system works, the pros and cons, we'll speculate a bit on what things might look like, but most importantly, we'll discuss what it means for athletes who are looking to qualify. What should you do in terms of race selection? Can you make any kind of predictions regarding times needed to qualify, etc.? But before we get into the interview, big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration. They create carbohydrate and electrolyte products to help you fuel and hydrate your training and racing optimally. And they do that by having high quality products that make fueling and hydrating really seamless. They're very practical and they can be used in all sorts of endurance sports use cases. I haven't mentioned the Precision Fuel and Hydration blog in a while, so I want to give it a quick shout out because there you can find really good in-depth content. This is under performance advice on their website. And these are not the usual kind of SEO articles that you'll see on most websites, but it's high quality. It's written by sports scientists, experienced coaches, and elite athletes. And regarding products, if you want to try any of their products, use the code TTS25 on precisionfuelandhydration.com to get 15% off your first order of 2025. Now, without any further ado, let's get into the interview with Coach Russ Cox. Welcome back to That Triathlon Show, Russ. It's been many years, I think 6 or even 7 since you were last on. How are you doing?
I'm really good, thanks. Yeah, things are busy at the moment, obviously, with the new qualification system we are going to talk about. So I've been working a lot on that, but yeah, things are going well.
For listeners that may not be familiar with you or your work, can you give us a bit of an introduction to both of that, both who you are and what is... Yeah, what is the work that you're doing, especially when it comes to the qualification stats and so on?
Sure. So yeah, my name's Russ Cox. I am a triathlon coach, and also I spend my time collecting and analyzing results data from Ironman and Ironman 70.3 races, particularly looking at things like qualification and what's involved and how that looks in reality. And I've been doing that for, I think it's about 13, 14 years of, I started, about 2012, I started collecting data. It was an idea that kind of came as a side project to coaching, in that I was kind of interested in what performance at Ironman really looked like, rather than just what everyone talks about and what people say happens at Ironman. I wanted to see, if I look at all the data, what actually happens, where do people come, what are the average times, things like this, and yeah, what does it take to qualify?
Yeah, and I'm sure that a lot of listeners have used your website. We'll put the links in the show notes, of course, for people not familiar. It's a great resource, and now you put in a lot of work over the last month to get it up to date with the new changes that were announced early this month, as we're recording here at the end of July. So maybe let's start with, most people will be familiar with, at least with the old system, but if we describe that briefly and then contrast that to the new system that was announced by Ironman early July for how to qualify for the Ironman World Championships and the 73 World Championships, let's start there and then we'll break down some of the most important and interesting differences.
Okay. So in all of the system, in both systems, each race will have a number of qualification slots that will be handed out to age groupers, places for the world champs in their respective distances. What's changed is how those slots are distributed among the age groups. So in the old system, it was based on the number of athletes who started the race and the ratio of age groups. So effectively, the biggest age group got the most slots overall. Technically, it used a particular piece of maths called the D'Hondt algorithm to allocate it. It's something that's actually designed for dealing with votes in elections. It's a way of managing votes in elections, but it also works quite nicely if you want to kind of smooth out the kind of distribution over a range of different age groups, it with different sized age groups. So that was how it used to be allocated. Some races, or for a long time, races would have one allocation of slots and they were just allocated over male and female age groups as one. In recent years, for 70.3, for quite a long time, for Ironman, when they split the world championships, they would give a proportion of slots to men, a proportion to women, and allocate it separately. The new system has a number of slots at the race, but now you can't allocate those slots until the race is finished, because it's based on finishing performance. And in particular, what makes it probably a little more complicated to get your head around immediately is your finish time is adjusted, it's normalized based on a scale that Ironman has developed using times at the world championships over recent years. So everyone finishes the race, your times are adjusted based on this weighting, which effectively says, you know, if you're a man in your 35 to 39, then your performance is equal to this level of performance. If you're a man in his 60s, we adjust your performance, in this case, making it faster, to account for the fact that aging and so on has adjusted the relative performance you're going to produce. You know, you're not as fast as a 35-year-old anymore. And so it's an attempt to try and balance performance rather than taking just the absolute finish time, which will always favor younger, certain age groups more, just because that's kind of where people's performance peak is likely to occur. And then, yeah, once you've done that allocation based on performance, slots are handed out simply in order that you find them there, with one going to every single age group who finishes. So there's at least one slot in any age group, and the rest are just given out in the order of your qualifying rank, basically.
Yeah, I guess it's important to highlight that one slot that every age group has, it goes to the winner, and it can roll down as far as third place, but it can't roll down any further than that.
Yeah.
So what ends up happening in a lot of races when you might have, how many age groups do you tend to have? 14 or so, 16?
In each gender, yeah, something like that. I think generally the standard range is it goes from 18 to 24 up to 90 plus is kind of the categories you see now.
Yeah.
So that's two per decade. But so it's around 14, 15 probably. And obviously it varies because those older age groups are not always present.
So
the 70 plus age groups are, you know, may or may not be present.
Yeah. So in some of those, so I actually think I looked at some stats on for some of the recent Ironman races. So no, I can't remember off the top of my head, but if you have a 70.3 race recently with 30 slots for the males and 30 for the females, then you might have something like 10 slots that go to the age group winners, or if it rolls down to the podium, and 20 that goes to the pool of age, normalized age graded results, as Ironman calls it. And so, yeah, that's how it works. And I guess another thing to point out is that the slight difference between how the 7.3 Worlds qualification works compared to the World Championship qualification, especially now that we're back to one day at Kona from 2026. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So, as I sort of mentioned, has happened and was happening with Ironman as well. 70.3 has a number of slots allocated to women and a number of slots allocated to men. And Ironman just allocates one set of slots across everyone. So the difference is here, what you will see with the new system is certainly there are guaranteed, say, 30 slots for women, Ironman 70.3, because that's been allocated to just women. And there's a guaranteed 30 slots for men. Whereas in Ironman, where you have 40 for everyone, it very much depends on this performance factor. So if women are performing particularly well in this race, their times push them up that kind of normalized ranking, they may take more slots. If they haven't pushed up there, if their performances haven't, then they might have fewer slots. Again, the minimum is one per age group there. But yeah, that number of slots can vary a bit more. So yeah, if we have 40, I think what we're typically seeing, if you kind of run the numbers in practice on past Ironmans, is that a lot of the time it works out at around 20%, 25% going to women of the slots, maybe up a little bit higher. And that will vary between Europe and America because participation numbers are quite different for women in those regions.
And that is for Ironman, to clarify, because again, for 7.3, we have separate days. So the number of slots for men and women is overall, it's equal. So you have the typical races, 7.3 races, a normal 7.3 race might have 30 slots for the men and 30 for the women. So in other words, you know, 7.3, you compete, men compete against men for the slots and women against women. But in the Ironman, you compete against everybody.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Because everybody is racing for the same total allocation of slots.
Yeah.
All right. And how do you, if we go in a little bit into the details of this age grading and the Kona standard, 7.3 standard, as Ironman calls it, with how you normalize, how you recalculate your actual finish time to your virtual finish time and compare across age group, across genders. How does that work? Can you explain that?
Yeah, so you know, the kind of end result, the end calculation is quite simple. Ironman has given out their calculated coefficients, their factors for adjusting each age group, and they can be used. They've explained how they calculate it as well, which is, like I said, it's based on the World Championship performance. Specifically for Ironman, they are only using Kona World Championships, so they've not factored Nice times into that. And what they've looked at, what they've described is they've looked at the top 20% of each age group and taken an average time for those kind of front of pack performers at the World Championship. And then they've looked at the ratios between those, finding the fastest age group and then adjusting each other age group. So you know, basically working out the difference, the multiplier for other age groups to match that age group in speed. So you end up with a simple coefficient that says that effectively, again, I can't, off the top of my head, I can't remember, is it 35 to 39 or was it?
30 to 34 is the fastest for the Ironman. For 7.3, it's the 18 to 24, actually.
And then with 70.3, they do men and women separately with the coefficient as well, rather than as a single group. So there's a male coefficient and a female coefficient for 70.3, but for Ironman, there's one. So yeah, so basically that means that if you're a 30 to 34 year old man, your finish time will be multiplied by one to get your qualification time. So your performance is taken as you guys are the best performing at Kona, so we don't need to adjust to correct for differences in ability and development. But if you're 50 to 54 year old man, then you will have a factor that your time gets multiplied by, that it'll be like 0.9 something or other. Basically, it will reduce and make your time faster.
And I try to pull up the, keep talking while I try to pull up the coefficients here.
Yeah, so it will make your time faster for this qualification time. And in the end, once you've applied that to everyone, each result gets multiplied by its age group coefficient, calculated from that difference in Kona or the 70.3 World Champs. And it gives you a whole new set of times that are adjusted, and you can reorder based on those and rank those from first to last. And it will be different to the finish time order, because some people will have their time adjusted quite significantly, and it will bring those times up ahead of those where the adjustment is much smaller.
Yeah, just to continue the example with the 50 to 54 year old man, their coefficient is 0.9002, so basically 90%.
Yeah.
So if you are a 10-hour, if you finish in exactly 10 hours, you would essentially get your age normalized age graded time as 9 hours.
Yeah.
So you get a 10% reduction. Whereas if you compare with a 50 to 54 year old woman, then the coefficient is 0.81, so you get a 19% reduction.
Yeah.
So if that woman finishes in 10 hours as well, then their age graded time would be something more in the lower 8 hours.
Yeah.
So a very competitive normalized age graded time. Good. And so I guess with the 20% of fastest times from each age group, how they based the coefficients and using Kona for the Ironman and the 73 World Championships for the 73 standards. I guess one question here that we could talk about is how do you see this method, or just in terms of coming up with the correct coefficients? Do you think that is a good way to approach it? Because I guess what they are trying to achieve here is to you want to not take everybody, because then the spread is too much. They want to try to see what is realistically the correct, like how much does performance degrade with age, but without taking just the top one or top five, because then you might run into just having too small sample size and outliers and all of that. And it should be said that Ironman have also said that they have removed outliers before applying the 20%, or within this process, they have also worked to remove outliers. So I guess that's also part of it. But what are your views on this method of coming up with the coefficients?
I mean, overall, I thought it's quite a smart solution. It's an interesting idea. It's something I'd kind of been thinking about playing with for entirely different reasons. So, you know, one of the things I would love to be able to do well on my site is to enable you to go and look at Ironman Lanzarote and Ironman Frankfurt and compare performances between the two races. And obviously we know they're incredibly different courses, completely different times. And you can't just say, well, 10 hours in Frankfurt, 10 hours in Lanzarote, that's the same thing. They're clearly not. The difficulty is if you take, it's quite obvious that if you look at performance over the whole of a race, there are differences between how the top 5% of an age group are performing and the bottom 5%. For example, the bottom 5%, in actual fact, you know, as you get to the back of the pack of a race, it in a sense, changes in course and so on probably are less significant than you think to performance. Most of those people will either be getting through or not based on their training, their build up, their fitness levels and so on. Whereas when you look at the front, you probably see far more very subtle adjustments coming from the course. So I guess, at the back of the pack, big changes like really hot conditions, really hilly, it will absolutely slow the race down and you'll see that. And you won't see quite the same change at the front, but it will be important at the front. At the back, ultimately, it kind of feels like you just affect how far back it goes, if you see what I mean, or how close to the cutoff people are.
Mm.
So what I mean, effectively what I'm saying is you couldn't apply one single ranking system or normalization process to the whole race and perfectly determine everyone's relative performance in that sense. But if you're only thinking about qualification for a world championship and you only want, you know, what's effectively the top 1% of performers in your race, or less than that in many of them, you can potentially apply something that seems to be true about the fastest athletes or something about the fastest athletes to them all and say, well, for these front-of-pack guys, that applies. You know, I think it would be difficult to say with absolute certainty, is this the best representation of performance differences between the age groups? They definitely exist, but is this the best way? They've certainly put the effort in to avoid things like you say, like small sample sizes leading to kind of skewed results or weird kind of particular individual anomalies, you know, some exceptional athlete pulling a group way ahead of where it should be, things like that, by taking that top 20%. And also, actually probably worth mentioning, they're not just looking at 1 year's top 20%, they're looking at like a rolling, I think it's 5 year history.
Yeah.
So they're kind of giving quite a broad group to take that number from rather than a small point, which helps kind of give a bit more confidence that relationship's probably a little more stable. So I think normalizing's quite an effective way to try and address this. I think one of the things, having looked at qualification for years now, is I'm very aware that you're never going to have a system that everybody thinks is fair or likes or believes does the best job. You know, there's an element in lots of sports where there's a degree of arbitration. A decision is made about this is the process, this is the game we play, here you go. And yet some people will find that they feel it's not as favorable as they would like. Others may think it's great for them. But yeah, I think it's quite a clever approach to it. I think overall I like it more than the simple approach of how many people have turned up and raced.
Yeah, this certainly seems much fairer than the old system to me as well. Yeah, I'll try to repeat what you said before about the impact of the course in a different way. And just to see that, first of all, that I understood correctly, or I interpreted you correctly, but also so that the listeners, make sure that the listeners understand that. I guess a comparison would be the Boston Marathon qualification. So there you have something that is partially similar with, you have your certain times that you need to, like a minimum cutoff time based on your age group that you need to beat in a different marathon than, or in the Boston Marathon for that matter, but within the qualification window. But then if more people than they have slots available achieve that standard, then there is a cutoff within each age group. I believe that's correct, the way I'm explaining it.
Yeah, I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah, either way, the problem there, or the what makes it easier for the Boston Marathon to do that, and they have still, despite that, made some changes now with how downhill marathons, there's more limitations around which marathons are not eligible because they're just too fast. But in marathon running, a lot of marathons are kind of similar. There are smaller differences. So you can go to any ratified marathon, and the difference is not going to be huge. So they have basically taken an overarching time for each age group, that this is the time that you need to beat. But what you were saying about courses is that, well, Ironman can't really do that because the courses are so different. So instead, what you're trying to compare is, you're trying to compare the participants themselves and the impact of age themselves, and then you normalize within each qualification race. And that also, of course, gets rid of a lot of other potential problems that we have in triathlon, like what would the impact be of a canceled swim if you have a certain time cutoff? What would the impact be of some storm, really hard winds would have a much bigger impact on a triathlon performance than a running performance. So I think, as you said, that how they have done it is in general, it seems really good. I do think that it's fairer than the old system. But as you said, there will always be situations where it maybe doesn't work out as everybody wants it to. I think that from my perspective, I don't think the coefficients, they're probably not meant to be either, but they're definitely not representative of physiological performance degradation over time. I think it's more of a physiology plus life situation plus other factors.
Yeah.
Because
it's kind of, that physiological factor we're kind of reading it from the end result and trying to work back. And as you say, there are other factors, life is absolutely one of them. In Ironman, for example, you mentioned in 70.3 how, the youngest age group is the fastest one. In Ironman, it's later. Some of that's physiological, and generally there seems to be better performance in Ironman in those 30s for a lot of people. But also there is very much a kind of financial life situation there. Ironman has always been, in the old system, 40 to 44 year old men were the biggest age group and got the most slots always. And generally, they certainly were performing well. They weren't so far behind the 30s for performance. But a lot of it, was always kind of an observation that they were in a stage of their life where they probably had potentially the money to support this more easily and so forth. Whereas your 25 to 29 year old maybe is not in the same situation for this sport. And I think also with Ironman, quite often where you would see 18 to 24 year olds, for example, who were exceptionally good, they're very quickly filtering into the pro ranks if they're going to go that way. Or, a smaller pool might either drop out or continue up. But you're right. It because we're reading the very final outcome of a whole bunch of races, physiology is a factor in it, but so's everything else that got people to Kona, and finances is one of those factors.
For sure. Yeah, I think if you wanted to really represent the physiology and the natural aging process as accurately as possible, then you would just take the fastest time of each age group. and that would be the best representation. But then, even though, yeah, you could argue that that's outliers, but maybe you just make it a smaller percentage, like the top 5% or something like that. But that would bring you more closer to physiology. But I think that that's also, but I don't think that that's the target necessarily. I think the target for them is to get a bit of a good combination of the life factors that do matter for amateur athletes and the physiology itself. So let me see here. Yeah. So you talked about overall liking the new system. If you break it down a bit into pros and cons, what would you say that those are?
I mean, I think I'll start with the cons. I think the main con it for people would be that it is much harder to look at a race beforehand and have a sense of what qualification might be like there. It's far more variable than it used to be, which means that when you look at a race, you know how many slots are going to be at that race, but until that particular event is done, how they're going to be handed out is going to be an unknown precisely. You know, what I've looked at so far, kind of playing with how these numbers would look on previous races and compare and seeing how that looks compared with the old system, would suggest that you can absolutely, you know, I looked at some races and you can see instances where 40 to 44 year old men at a 70.3 that's happened using a new system had one slot. So the winner got their slot. All the other men in that age group, their relative normalized performance was not good enough to beat in one case, you know, a whole bunch of 35 to 39 year old men who had 9 slots. So it does allow for quite big changes to numbers, and where in the past you could expect, you know, like I say, I'm 40 to 44, my group's going to have the most slots. Who knows until race day?
What if you don't think about, and I guess that's the whole point, that now we're no longer thinking about age groups in terms of qualification. We're thinking about the normalized age graded time. So can you see, if you look at 5 years of historical data simulated to use the new system, that Ironman Texas, typically you need a normalized age graded time of 9 hours and 10 minutes to get the final slot or something like that. Is there a pattern or a stability in that kind of data that you could look at, and then you could back calculate your what you need to do as your actual finish time?
I'm not fully analyzed that yet. My observation so far playing with that sort of data is actually it tends to be quite variable. You know, I think from, you know, actually another con, as it were, with this is obviously your finish position, where you cross the line relative to other people. And I realize nowadays with the rolling start, you are racing in a sense without knowing exactly your relative position to everyone around you, whether they started a little bit ahead of you or behind you in that rolling wave. But yeah, you're kind of, you cross the finish line and you have a time, but you've got to then see what the adjusted time is and got to wait to see what other adjusted times are before you'll know your actual ranking. You know, so effectively, you know, in your age group, if you're one, first place, that's definitely it. Everything else, yeah, you've just got to see how you perform relative to everyone else. And what I've seen so far, and you know, one of the things you can do on my website now is go to any race, put in a time and an age group, and see where that would rank over past years of results. It would just calculate where you'd have slotted in at those particular races. And playing about with that as I was testing it and making sure it worked, what I'm generally finding is there is quite a bit of variety.
That's interesting.
And I would say what's quite clear is if you're serious about qualification, you've got to be looking at, well, I need to be looking at what my age group performances are like at this race and expecting to be up near the front to be confident about it. You know, you can't have that factor before the race of, well, I know my age group gets eight slots, so I can look at, you know, what I used to have on my website a lot of was, you know, you can look at what eighth place times tend to look like and how they varied, things like that. now, you've probably got to be thinking, I've just got to be as up front in my age group or in the race as I can be to be confident of that. So in some ways, it simplifies it because it has gone back to very much you've just got to be one of the fastest, as fast as you can be. And, on that day, you need to, if you perform well enough in your age group, gives you a good shot. Of course, the challenge is if it just happens that another particular age group or other age groups have some really relatively fast performers compared to what you've seen before that race, they may push up that table as well. So I think, you're going to see that variability, and it's almost like an awareness of the whole competition. I suppose the other thing you can't do that people used to do is look at if they could find the start list, look at who else was in their age group to see if they could work out who was ahead of them. Because actually now, in theory, you've got to look at the whole race start list and check everyone out in order to do that. So it's made it harder to know beforehand.
Yeah. But I not having done any kind of analysis on this, just thinking about it statistically, it should, as you've always needed to do your best performance on the day, of course, that doesn't change. But even if you were in an age group where you could, let's say you knew that you could expect 6 slots in your age group, then you could be unlucky on the day that you have like 6-7 really fast athletes turning up on the day just that year, even the previous years, that wasn't the case. Now, when you're competing against everybody, you might have 20-25 slots in the performance pool plus all of the age groups winners. So if you're just looking at the performance pool, you're looking at maybe 25 slots or so. So you should be able to expect, just statistically based on the fact that there's more people, that there's a bit more stability in what you would need to do year to year compared to when you're comparing the smaller group of 6 people, or let alone 3 people or 2 people. That's what I think. But again, just speculation.
Yeah. I think that pattern will start to build and show up a little more, and we get used to it. At this stage, it still kind of feels very new, very changeable. In some ways, I view it as a pro as well, in the sense that it starts to be, because it's a little bit more about relative performance, probably what you need to think about is what race course suits me best, if you're thinking about qualification overall. And that's always something that should be considered. But, you probably want to try and aim for the course that you believe you perform best on. You don't go to a really hilly course if you feel like you can't perform on a hilly course or that doesn't favor you. But you do if you feel you perform better in those environments and so on. And, those are always tweaks I think we should be doing, but it perhaps takes away this distraction of how many slots are here, how many slots are there, to a large extent.
That's also one of the implications that I've been discussing with the athletes I coach that are considering going for a qualification race, that now more than before, you need to do a course that suits where you are relatively stronger. Whereas before, it might be a lot more about looking at where are there likely to be a lot of slots in your age group and maybe relatively slower results in that age group. So some people would travel the world to find races and that's maybe less the case now, unless you're somebody who is exceptional in, let's say, heat and humidity, then it might still be relevant to go to Malaysia or something like that.
In fairness, I think under any system, if you're exceptional in heat and humidity, going to Malaysia and races in that kind of region of Asia is a good choice if you really are in that, because those races are very different to the others.
I guess one thing on that, when it comes to race selection, that I've been putting out as a hypothesis, is that if we think about Ironman, the coefficients are based on data from Kona. Mm-hmm. What is the impact of courses that are much slower versus or much faster than Kona? What I'm thinking is that a much slower course will probably be a better choice for the athletes that are faster in absolute terms, so generally the younger age groups, because the differences in speed and in time will be exacerbated when you're out there for longer. So instead of being out there for, let's say, 8 hours for a top 30-year-old age group male and X hours for a top 50-year-old age group male, and then you're going to Ironman Wales and it's 9 hours versus whatever, then I think that that's probably where if you're from that, from an older age group, for example, it might make more sense to go to a course that is faster, because I think that the times bunch together more versus spreading out more on the slower courses. Again, a bit speculation, but that's something I've been thinking about, and I'm curious to find out when you start collecting your data to see if that shows up in the data as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's an interesting idea, and yeah, there is that potential, as you say, the impact of a tighter race versus a slightly more dispersed race, or where those times are bigger, could well show up there. I think, yeah, it will favor particular athletes a little bit if the race is generally faster and it lets some age groupers kind of get those faster times in their age group because the course is very quick, then yeah, it might help them. It's going to take time, I think, to see all that. And certainly one of the things I am going to do, I haven't got to it yet, is basically start running data on all the past results as if we were using the new system to see what happens with times over bigger pictures, bigger periods of time, and whether we see some sort of pattern there. But yeah, I mean, I think actually one other thing to mention, I think, with the new system is we focus a lot on the fact it's a new system, but the other thing that changed is the total number of slots reduced ultimately, because, it's more like it was, in theory, a bit higher, it should be, but, we've had, whatever it is, 4 years, 5 years of two world championships, separated world championships for men and women, with effectively, 2,000 plus athletes each available. So like 4,000 spots to give out, say, or a bit more than that. Mm. And now we're back down to 2,000 odd athletes again.
2,500, I think.
2,500. Yeah, but what to bear in mind in there is a number of those will be other categories of ways of getting in and so on. There's still kind of a legacy system and things like that. Mm. So the other factor that's really changed the next year of qualification is just that there's a major reduction in the number of slots for the Ironman World Championship because there are fewer athletes going to be racing it in future years. So even if we had the old system, we would not be in a time where the biggest age group was getting 10 slots at some races. We'd be at a time where at a championship race like Texas or something, the biggest age group might get 5 or 6 slots. So that was another factor that's come in as well. One of the reasons it's harder, if anything, is there simply aren't as many spots.
Yeah, very good. Very good point. We shouldn't just play in the new system if we find it harder to qualify. Yeah, the other thing that I wanted to ask about is they are going to update the coefficients, so the Kona standard or the Sanyon 3 standard, as they call them. So basically using a 5-year rolling average. Mm. So by the time that we start the next cycle, now we already started the 2026 cycle for 73 Worlds. I think early July was the start of that cycle. And then by mid to late August, we will start the Kona qualification cycle for 2026. But then for the next cycles, 1 year, the oldest year that was used in these current standards, will drop off, and they will instead use the add in the results from this year's world championships. And a theory that I saw floated and that made a lot of sense to me actually is that there could be, if you have the initial coefficients, if they are slightly favorable or unfavorable to one age group or another, that could lead to a positive feedback loop in the sense that it becomes more easy for the easier group to get in and more difficult for the difficult group to get in. Mm-hmm. And then it, over time, that could lead to certain groups being very, very hard to get into and certain groups being much easier. Is that something you thought about? And do you have any thoughts on that?
It's an interesting question, and it's going to be tricky to see if it does happen for a while, because obviously with the rolling average, it would take a number of years to really filter in. You know, the 2027 season will have 1 year of this new system's consequence coming into play and so on. So it would take a while to filter in. I guess there might be an argument that if the coefficient favours a particular age group, that should in theory mean you are opening that age group will have more athletes there, but it will have drawn in more towards the back of potential qualifiers, rather than we've not added more first place athletes as such. Mm. We've added, you know, fifth, sixth place in that age group or and further back. So there is an element there that you could say it will slightly dilute that age group, and the top 20% should still kind of hold there. It will get a bit bigger. If it gets a bit bigger, then because we're taking some people further back, we slow that time. And I guess, yeah, their coefficient shifts, doesn't it?
That's the theory.
Yeah.
And then the opposite effect in the faster age group, that they get smaller, and then you take 20% instead of taking the, I don't know, top 30 times, you take the top 20 times, and then that coefficient gets faster, making it ever more difficult.
It's an interesting one. I think
we'll have to see over time.
We're going to have to see how that plays out. I mean, I think in reality, what we can also take from this change is that Ironman is not going to be afraid to really shift up the system if something needs it, I guess.
Yeah.
And I suppose the other thing with that is when we talk about that, roll down still exists in this system. So there is still an element of there are people going potentially that would, you know, will not be right in that, you know, top 40 performers, say. And I know, for example, someone commented on a Facebook post or something I made about the fact that at Swansea, 70.3, a couple of weeks back, for example, they reached a point of basically asking who was present in, I think for women, possibly, I can't remember what they said now, but basically, is there anyone present who's eligible at this point? You know, so that would have gone to someone, the slots go to someone, but yeah, they're not necessarily there. So I wonder if perhaps if there's going to be a tweak there, maybe it's that 20% range that ends up needing adjusting, that might be too deep rather than, and not quite focusing enough on the high performers, especially if an age group is kind of expanding. And like I said, you know, if you look at qualification, which age groups are getting slots at races based on the new system, it is far more chaotic, and suddenly you know, like I said, I was looking at 70.3 races, so the slot numbers are a bit higher than they would be for Ironman, but you get one race where 35 to 39 of 9 slots, then 40 to 44 of 1, then 45 to 49 of 6, you know, so it's a far more chaotic kind of system in that middle bunch of age groups than it was. I think some people have commented that possibly favours older age groups a bit more now. I think there'd be more instances of older age groups getting extra slots, basically, where they have a couple of, you know, 60, 64, 65, 69 guys or women who are, their adjustment and performance is enough to push them in.
That's a listener question I had from Senen Tarancon, who asks if you think the new method is fair, the older age groups are benefiting. So but looking at your data, the brief overview picture that I got from it, and this was from the single 3 day, the more so because that's where we have from the actual qualification cycle. As you said, my impression was also that it was quite variable across which age groups are dominant. The one thing that I saw was that there were like the men 18 to 24 in almost every race got one slot. So that's maybe an example of where that group is treated unfavorably, let's say.
Yeah.
No. But, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a potential for certain groups to find that there's not as much. I think, the thing with Ironman 70.3 data is because of the split race, the split championship and the extra slots, you see bigger numbers there. I think when you look at Ironman old, you know, if, when you apply this to old Ironman results, you see that variability again. But now we're suddenly looking at a big age group is 4 or 5 slots, basically. Mm. And that's a really big one if they get that many. And most of the time, a lot of them are getting 1 or 2. And we do certainly see older age groups getting 1 or 2. You know, I think the question of women and the number of slots going to women, as I sort of mentioned earlier, largely it's around that kind of 20-25% level, I think, at the moment, you know, from what I can see. It's certainly not been, some people were, you know, I certainly experienced people concerned that we were suddenly going to see women getting loads of slots that the, you know, because of this new system, it doesn't distribute it in that way. If there are enough women performing, once they're adjusted, you do see extra slots there, but actually there's a lot of races where it's one per age group with 1 or 2 edging up to 2. So it's changed. It's not kind of it's completely rebalanced it to what we've been used to. Now, whether that balance favors people, I think it's going to take a while to really discern. And I do go back to that fact that whatever system, there would be that question of actually, is this, you know, this group looks this way and that group looks that way. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I started doing these sort of stats was I don't like seeing, you know, someone saying, well, it looks like this is, you know, being favored. I want to know whether that's actually the case really, you know, because obviously we all have our confirmation biases and so on when we look at things and our brains tend to find patterns to support
what we believe.
So I kind of want to see if the data actually says that or whether, you know, you've just looked at 3 or 4 races. And, you know, if you only look at 2 or 3 races, you may pick the ones where they had a great 65 to 69 year old field. And the rest of the year, they're just getting one slot.
Yeah. But also the current system is greatly influenced by the previous system. So you mentioned the women's slots. For example, if Ironman had had 50% men and women at Kona over the last 5 years instead of what we have had now, or let's say over the 5 years, the data collecting years to come up with the coefficients, then we would also now be seeing more, the current proportions across genders would be more similar to 50-50 than they are now, because the 20 fastest percent in each of the age groups for the women would be slightly slower than they are now, meaning the coefficients would be slightly softer. So the percentages that we're seeing now across genders, and the same would apply, I guess, for age groups, are influenced by the percentages that we saw in the World Championships over the last 5 years that data collection took place to come up with these coefficients.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair.
But yeah, it's an interesting question. You can argue what's fair or not. Personally, I certainly think it's fairer than the old system, and you can definitely have some debate around the details of it, but I think it is a step forward from my perspective, at least.
I think the old system, it simply came down to who mostly does this sport, basically. That was the decider, what age range is most into Ironman. And you know, in either system, ultimately qualification comes down to trying to perform your best and meeting a standard. What's changed is the standard is now a little bit tighter because there's fewer slots for Ironman, at least, and it's a little bit harder to work out what that standard might be before you go to a race.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you need to be able to turn up, and you're going to need to be at a level of fitness and you know, execute the race on the day to a level that puts you somewhere very near the front of the race overall, you know, or especially relative to your age group, but possibly overall for younger age groups, at least.
I think we actually covered most of the things that I have in my questions sheet here, but let's maybe finish by summarizing, maybe repeating some of the things we already said, but the actionable takeaways for people that are interested in trying to qualify, or even knowing whether it is realistic for them to try to qualify. What are the action steps that people can do should they look at some data, historical data? If they know that, okay, I'm going to go for qualification, what should they do then in terms of race selection? Any practical applications or implications of these things for people that are interested in qualification? What would you tell them?
So I think there are a few things I would do, and it's probably slightly different to how it was with the old system. In some respects, it can be relatively easy to decide if you've got a reasonable shot at qualification, in that, you know, especially if you've raced some Ironman before, have a picture of how you perform. You can kind of take your past times. On my website now, I have a page where you can put a time in an age group and just see where that would rank you at lots of past races, like last 3 or 4 years of races. It will give you your qualification rank at each race. So a very easy thing to do is work out, do these look like they're qualifying ranks? We know for Ironman, for example, what they've announced so far, 40 slots is pretty much the normal, some getting 55. And then the championship slots we've seen so far have been about 100 for a race. So based on that, you know, you could kind of say if your qualification ranks at races aren't in the 40 region or the 55 region, depending on how many slots they get, your chances are starting to definitely shift away. We can never know about roll down in all of this. So you can start to get a picture there. Now, of course, if you're kind of getting all 200s, it's all pretty simple and straightforward at that point. You can see that, well, if based on this, I'm not even close. You know, it's when you're kind of seeing some 40s, some 50s, some 60s, some 70s, that's where it gets trickier, I think. And I think generally my advice there for people, you know, I sometimes will consult with someone, help them look at races, talk about options, you know, and often what we're looking at is, are there races out there that look like I get close to that sort of qualifying time? And then what do I need to do to be comfortably in that range to see that most of the time I would be in there? And it starts to shape a sense of the performance you're going to need to deliver. So I would say generally my approach would be, have a look at what your ranking would be at lots of different races, get a sense of whether it's even within the right range. If you're starting to get into that range where you feel like it's not an impossible jump, what you really need to do is start trying to work out where that performance level is that makes it a bit more certain. It's always a roll of the dice in the end, but yeah, it's very much about managing your odds. I think what will be more difficult now is choosing a race and saying, well, this one I get lots of high qualification ranks in, because, you know, I rank highly in this one a lot. I can tell you that if you do use my website to search time against races, you're going to get all the like Malaysia, Philippines, and that at the top, because they're much slower than other races. But the reality is you won't necessarily produce the same time there. So yeah, it's trying to bring a balance of these factors into play, getting a sense of where you are and getting a sense of the performance you need, and realistically working out your pathway to that performance in the end.
Yeah,
that's the process you've got to go through. I think what you don't want to go into it thinking, and you shouldn't really have done that in the old system, is to go and look at, can I find there's a race where I qualify at and I don't have to worry, I just need to train as usual or expect to go there. You know, there's going to, if your times generally put you, you know, qualification ranking up like 20s, 10s, this sort of thing, or you're winning your age group at races, and obviously, you know, when you go to a race, that's your intention and you're in a very good position. It's those people who are more on the boundary. It's getting a sense of where you need your performance to be and then working out the pathway to being able to do that and determining if it's realistic. Again, it's that thing of, you know, if you need a 10-hour Ironman in Lanzarote, that's a different experience to needing a 10-hour Ironman in, yeah, Frankfurt or Barcelona or somewhere like that. So,
yeah. So if I did an Ironman last year, and can I find my virtual time in that particular race on your website? Is that possible?
Yeah. So yeah. Every single result set on my website will calculate and display a a qualification time and qualification rank. So the normalized time and the ranking that would give you based on the current coefficient.
Yeah.
And the plan is that that will roll each time you move into a new qualification, that will roll over and potentially I'll let people select older ones if they want to see how it changes as well. But yeah, so you can go to any race and see that. Also, when you go to a particular race, there is a section available where you can put a time in your age group and see how you would rank in every single year of that race with that time. So it kind of shows you, it lets you, you know, particularly for the bigger races, say Lake Placid that just happened, where you've got, I've got 20 plus years of data you can look through. You know, you would see your 10:30 there. What rank does that get me every year of race that I've got? So like last 20, 25 years. And that can give you a picture a little bit of whether that time's consistently the right sort of level or whether it's very variable, you know, where it lies. And then, yeah, the other thing is this section where you can go in, just put a time, an age group, and just see what lots of races look like.
Yeah.
Go off and explore those in more detail.
Yeah, I guess the only caveat with that method, though, is that you have to, like, you want to be quite, you shouldn't take your time from Ironman, what is it fast, Ironman Frankfurt and apply it to Ironman Wales or something like that.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, one of the things to help a little bit with that particular section will give you the overall ranking you'd have on the race. So you discover, for example, if you, like you say, you take a time from Frankfurt and put it into Wales and suddenly it tells you you would be winning the race overall. Mm. So it would tell you your overall rank in the race that time would give your division rank, your age group rank in that race, your qualification rank, and also what percentile of finishers you would be in. So you can kind of look at a few stats there to get a picture of not only, yeah, I put in this time and it says that definitely qualifies you, but also, but that makes me in the top 0.5% of all finishers of that race. So not only does it qualify me, but I've got to be, yeah, the fastest 0.5% of athletes there.
Yeah, that's nice. That's how I always compare my athletes' races, like what sort of relative performance they put is the percentile of finishers that they finish in.
You want the qualifying rank to be high, to be in with a chance, but if that also needs you to be in a very tiny percentile of finishers there, then you know that that's not as easy to achieve necessarily. You may have picked a time that's very hard on that course. Whereas if it's a slightly bigger percentile, then potentially there's a bit more scope that those times are realistically done on a course. And I mean, the other thing you can do, so when I'm talking through races with people, and I do this with race planning, when you look at results, I have distribution charts for all of the splits and that. So one of the things I would do when I'm race planning with an athlete is they might be saying, I'm hoping to do, you know, I think we talk about it, they want to have some times in mind. And whilst the process is about, you know, the effort, the work you're doing, athletes always want to have a sense of, do you think this time's realistic? One of the things I like to do is I go to the distributions and you can now cut off results. So for example, I could go to say Lake Placid and say an athlete says I want to do 10:30 there. I can only look at results under 10:30 and look at how bike times distribute there, and you can start to say, well, actually, you know, typically if you're going to be under 10:30, we're seeing bikes in this range, runs in this range, swims in this range, and start to build a picture of whether, you know, that's plausible for them. Because if you know, you say I want to do 10:30, but we find that, you know, only 5% of the bike they think they're capable of, or we think they're capable of, only 5% of people who are under 10:30 manage that, it's less likely than if it's right there in the middle. So there are tools as well, to kind of start to explore it. I think looking at one number or one set of results and saying that means that's the right one for me isn't thorough enough. You've got to dig down and check that this holds true and it's consistent with what you can do.
And I'm realizing that I've only scratched the surface of all the functions you have available on your website. So I'll be spending some more time there over the next few days. That's brilliant.
But yeah, there's a lot of filtering stuff I added in fairly recently. It lets you to kind of play about with this stuff and start to see things. And I am basically quite actively trying to build in new features to make it more powerful in terms of how we can compare and contrast races.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I would also say, just from my perspective, that could be an easy first step is, again, if you have done an Ironman this year, last year, you can check those results on your website and whether you would have been there or thereabouts in terms of qualification to assess whether it's realistic, or maybe you're a bit off, but not too much off, and you've improved now in training. So you know that, okay, I have a chance. And then from there on, it could also be almost as simple as just deciding which is the best course for you, the course that really plays to your strengths.
Yeah.
And as we talked about, that now as you're competing against everybody, not just your age group, in a relative sense, then that could be a pretty good way to go about it. But then again, if you want to know, okay, but what time do I need to do on that course? That's when you also go back and look at simulations from the last few years. But yeah, I think it's important to not forget that thing, not get too focused on what is the time I need to do, because that will vary so much based on the course. And actually,
yeah, no, absolutely,
your best chance might be at a slower race potentially.
Yeah.
And one more thing also to mention is that in addition to your website, on the Ironman Tracker app now for the 73 races, you can go and look at the age graded results after the races too. And that can be a good tool to just get a quick idea of who was the last qualifier there, who was the last person near the end of the qualifiers in my age group, what time did they do. That can also be a quick and easy way, although not as exact as the filters on your website, but a pretty simple and quick overview.
And also I'll mention as well, the other thing you can do with all of the results and views is, or most of them, you can go and put in whatever slot allocation you want. There's a little section that lets you say how many slots you want in the race, whether it's the old system or the new system, and it will reallocate and draw up who would qualify and so on, and what the times would be for people in that range based on that. So if you are speculating about future races and the information isn't there, you can go and see how old race data looks with speculative future race data quite easily.
That's great. Well, I'm sure you'll get a nice bump in website visitors after this, because it's really a great resource. And for anybody who is interested in qualifying, I think, it's a must visit site to play around with the stats and get a better idea of what you might need to do in different races. Is there anything that we haven't talked about the new system or qualification in general that we should mention?
I think we've been quite thorough. I mean, as I said, it's early days. Ironman will start using it a middle of August. I think we have an interesting thing where there's a couple of races that are going to have slots for both 25 and 26. Not sure what their plan is when you have overlapping slots like that, whether they're doing the you could claim one or the other. because I would expect that people will claim the cloner slot when you give them those options. But either way, they come up in August, and we start to see what it looks like for Ironman. It has been for 70.3 for a good few weeks now, so we've got quite a few results coming through for that. But Ironman starts next month, and then we start to really see what it looks like.
Yeah, exciting times. Thank you so much for coming on here, for talking about it, but also thank you very much for putting all of this information out there on your website.
Problem.
It's very much appreciated. Just as a final thing, where can people follow you? What is your website and any social media you want to plug?
So the website is coachcox.co.uk. And if you search for Coach Cox, you'll find it easily enough. And there are links to various things in there. I have an Instagram account and that linked off of that. So that's Coach Russ Cox. I couldn't get Coach Cox, obviously, at the time. And a Facebook page. And whenever I put results out, I will put information up there. I do put any kind of feature changes and updates up on Instagram and Facebook and that as well, so that I kind of try and keep people aware of what's going on and what new stuff is in there. And typically I'll try and get new results data in a day or two after the race, so it will then be in the system and you'll be able to look and explore.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Russ. It was great to have you on. And let's do it again another time when we have a bit more data from the new system.
Yeah, that'd be great. Great to speak with you.
I hope that you enjoyed that interview. As always, you can find the show notes on scientifictriathlon.com. And there, as well as in the episode description in your app, we will, of course, link to Russ's amazing website so you can play around with the stats, the simulations, and so on, and learn more about what it might take you to qualify for Kona or Sentiment 3 Worlds. Just a quick personal takeaway, I guess, or summary. As a coach, I will be for sure following this with keen interest in the first few Ironman races of the new qualification cycle. We already have a few races under our belt in the 73 Worlds qualification cycle for 2026 at the moment of recording, so there's already a bit of data to go by there, but it will definitely be interesting to see how it plays out also for the full Ironman qualification, especially seeing as that is a little bit different than the 73 qualification system, given that men and women compete in the same performance pool there. But regardless of whether you're looking to qualify for 73 Worlds or Ironman World Championships, or you're just interested in these kinds of things, then I think that go and check out Russ's website. It's an amazing resource for this kind of analysis, whether it's for yourself, for athletes you coach or support, or out of pure curiosity. I have a few exciting interviews lined up for the next few weeks. I'm not going to say any names just yet, as I haven't actually done the interviews at the moment of recording, but I hope to have some really good interviews coming up soon, so stay tuned. Please subscribe to the podcast if you're not already subscribed. I will, of course, also continue with the beginner series. At the moment of this episode coming out, we have done three of them, and beginner series episode 4 should be on the horizon very soon. I will probably take a break from working on the podcast in September, but I will have a try to get some episodes pre-recorded throughout August so that you might not experience much of a break, if any break at all. But just a note, if there is some quiet time in September or so, that this is a pre-planned break from actually working on the podcast. But let's see how that goes. Hopefully you will see new episodes in your feed regardless. Finally, a bit of promotion for what we do at Scientific Triathlon. We help athletes like you improve and perform better through individual coaching, through ready-made and customized training plans, and one-off or regular consultations. This episode was all about qualifying for Ironman and 73 World Championships, and if this is on your mind, and especially if this is an important goal of yours, then getting a coach is to me by far the single best thing you can do to maximize your chances. The level of competition for these spots is very high. As we discussed, for the Ironman, the number of slots is also reducing compared to the last few years. So it comes down to pretty fine margins of getting the most out of yourself without overdoing it to have any chance of getting a slot, unless you're just at such a high level that you can do it quite easily. But for most people, that is not the case. It's not an easy task to balance that, getting the most out of yourself and not overdoing it at the same time. And this is one of the main reasons that having a coach is such a massive help. But there are many others, of course. But regardless, if you're interested in coaching or in any of our other products and services, then check out more information on scientifictriathlon.com. And you can always email me. You can find my email through the episode description if you have any further questions. Finally, big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration, that you can find on precisionfuelandhydration.com. If you're looking for high quality, practical and tasty fueling and hydration products, make sure to try Precision Fuel and Hydration. And don't forget to take 15% off your first order with the code TTS25. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.